Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Nitzavim. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Parsha Nitzavim and the famous story from the Talmud, Bava Metzia, where there's the conflict between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. This is the famous story where it includes the carob tree uprooting itself, the stream of water running backwards, and the walls of the Beit Midrash starting to fall in. The story is discussed in the podcast by Rabbi Meir Schweiger, and I suggest that this would be an excellent podcast to discuss with your friends and your family to introduce them to the podcast and also to this famous and important story from the Talmud. It's a fascinating story for people of any age. I'd also like to suggest that in honor of the new year that you consider a donation to Pardes to help us directly support the podcast. Pardes is a small institution, so your gift will make a real difference. You can donate anytime online via donate.pardesusa.org. Thanks very much. This podcast also has a handout. You can check your iTunes or other podcast system that you use, and you'll see the PDF with the handout in addition to this episode of the podcast with Rabbi Meir Schweiger Shear. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger, who is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is, in fact, a double parsha. Parshiot Nitzavim Vayelech. Parshat Nitzavim always comes out on the Shabbat before Rosh Hashanah, and it is not by chance. Essentially, Parshat Nitzavim discusses the covenantal relationship between God and each individual, and we have discussed this at length in previous podcasts. Chapter 30 discusses the idea of tshuva, returning, repentance, a theme which is central to the days of awe. In the middle of chapter 30, we find a verse, chapter 30, verse 11, which says, "For this mitzvah which I am commanding you today is not too distant from you, not far away. It is not in heaven saying, who will go up on our behalf to the heavens and bring it to us and have us hear it in order that we should do it. It is not beyond the sea, saying, who will cross the sea and bring it to us, that we should hear it and we should do it." In verse 14, "For this word/matter is close to you, quite close to you, in your mouth and in your heart to do it." Verse 11 starts out with this mitzvah. What is the meaning of that phrase? I think that the simplest way of understanding it in the context is that we are talking about the mitzvah of tshuva. As we see in verse 14, where it says that it is very close to you, in your mouth and in your heart to do it. And we know that there are two components to tshuva. Tshuva in its essence has to do with change, with a transformation. And that is something which is very much in one's heart. And in fact, this is very appropriate because in chapter 29, it speaks of one's heart turning away from God, bringing about a catastrophe. So that the essence of tshuva has to do with one's heart being directed to God. Tshuva also has to do with what one says, as we are very familiar with from the prayers of the High Holidays, from the Slichot, the confession that one makes as part of their process of tshuva. And in effect, what the Torah is telling us is that tshuva is something which is within your grasp. It is possible for people to change, to transform themselves. It is not something which is beyond your grasp. On another level, we could understand ki ha-mitzvah hazot, this commandment, is referring to all commandments. And in effect, the Torah is telling us, all the commandments are within your grasp to do them. There is no commandment which requires us to be an angel, to go up to the heavens, to go beyond the sea. But I would like to examine today a very famous story in the Talmud that presents a different understanding of this phrase, Lo Bashamayim Hi. It is not in heaven. You can follow me in the attachment to the podcast, which is labeled Not in Heaven. The story appears in Masechet Bava Metzia, page 59a. And the story begins with a quote from a Mishnah which records an argument between Rabbi Eliezer and the sages regarding an issue of ritual purity. An oven which is made in sections, sandwiched together by sand, is such an oven deemed to be a utensil and hence capable of becoming ritually impure? Or is such an oven considered to be like a utensil of the earth, a utensil of stone, which does not become ritually impure? Rabbi Eliezer says that it is clean. It is not considered to be a utensil. Why? Because it is made in sections. The sand which bonds it together gives it a sense of being an inferior type of utensil. Whereas the rabbis say that no, we consider it to be a full utensil which can receive ritual purity. And this oven is known as the oven of Achnai. And the Talmud immediately asks, why is it given that name? And Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Samuel, it is called that way because on that day, the sages surrounded Rabbi Eliezer as this Achna snake. And they declared such an oven to be clean. And it was taught in the Braita that on that day, Rabbi Eliezer brought every conceivable argument to promote his position. But the sages did not accept his reasoning. And now we see the lengths to which Rabbi Eliezer wanted to prove his position as being correct. And Rabbi Eliezer said, if in fact the halachas like me, let this carob tree prove it. And thereupon the carob tree was uprooted 100 cubits from its place, and some say 400 cubits. And the sages replied, one cannot bring a proof from a carob. Then Rabbi Eliezer continued and said, if the halachas like me, let the channel of water prove it. Whereupon the channel of water began flowing backwards. And they retorted to him, one cannot bring a proof from a channel of water. And then he made a third argument. If in fact the halachas like me, let the walls of the Beit Midrash prove it. And the walls inclined to fall. Whereupon Rabbi Yoshua scolded them. And he said, if scholars are engaged in a halachic dispute, why are you getting involved? And then a kind of absurd situation was created. The walls did not collapse, fall in, out of respect to Rabbi Yoshua, but they did not resume their original upright position out of respect to Rabbi Eliezer. And they are still standing thus inclined. And finally Rabbi Eliezer said, if the halachas like me, let the heavens prove it. Whereupon a heavenly voice came out and said, why do you argue with Rabbi Eliezer, as the halacha is like him in all matters? And at that moment, Rabbi Yoshua stood up on his feet and said, it is not in heaven. At which point the Talmud asks, what did he mean by this? And Rabbi Yirmiya said, the Torah has already been given at Sinai, and hence we do not pay attention to a heavenly voice, because God has already written in the Torah at Mount Sinai, you must go after the majority. One time, Rabbi Natan met Elijah the prophet and asked him, "What is God doing at this moment?" And Elijah responded, "He is laughing and saying, 'My children have defeated me. My children have defeated me.'" The story is a fascinating story. Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim are disagreeing. Rabbi Eliezer tries to prove his point on many levels. And when he's not able to prove his point based on the power of his logic, he tries to prove his point through various signs. Signs which the rabbis do not accept. What is going on with these signs? Perhaps it is important to understand where Rabbi Eliezer is coming from. If we look at the second reference on my sheet, a quote from Masechet Sukkah, 28a. It was taught in a braita. There was once a time when Rabbi Eliezer spent the Shabbat, and it would seem to be basically the festival of Sukkot, in the Upper Galilee. In fact, it could be that this was actually just before Sukkot, as we will see. And the students asked him 30 laws regarding Sukkah. With respect to 18, he said to them, "I heard the law." With respect to the other 18, he said, "I did not hear." And Rabbi Yossi, the son of Rabbi Yehuda, said it was the exact opposite. 18 he heard, 12 he did not hear. At which point the student said, "Are all of your words based on hearing?" And he replied back, "You are forcing me to say something now which I never heard from my teachers. Throughout my life, no one ever came earlier than me to the Beit Midrash. I never slept in the Beit Midrash, whether it be a nap or a deep sleep. I never left anyone behind when I exited the Beit Midrash. I never engaged in idle conversation. And I never said anything which I did not hear from my teacher." What do we see here about Rabbi Eliezer? It would seem to be that Rabbi Eliezer was the pillar of the Beit Midrash. His whole life was in the Beit Midrash. Rabbi Eliezer was the first one to enter the doors, was the last one to leave. He never slept in the Beit Midrash. What did he do there? He absorbed everything that was to be taught there. He was the repository of the oral tradition. And as he himself said, "I never said anything which I did not hear from my teachers." Rabbi Eliezer's approach was that the Torah was given at Sinai in its entirety, transmitted down the generations. And therefore, the role of the sages, his role, is to basically absorb that tradition in its entirety, to faithfully transmit it to the next generation, so that the Torah, the truth, will not be lost. Now let's go back to the story. What are the signs which Rabbi Eliezer tries to bring to prove his point? The first sign is a carob, which is uprooted. We know from other sources that a carob tree takes a very long time to produce fruits. There's a famous story recounted in the Talmud about Choni the circle maker, who once saw a man planting a carob tree, which in the end was not the fruits of the carob tree, were picked by his grandson. And in fact, Choni the circle maker asked him, "Why are you doing this?" And the response, "If you're not going to be benefiting from the fruits." And the response was, "In the same way that my parents, my ancestors, planted trees for me, I need to plant the trees for the next generation." The Torah is symbolized by the carob tree. The continuity, the idea of the importance of transmission from one generation to the next, the ideas of having something which needs to be rooted and where the fruits will be enjoyed by the future generations. Rabbi Eliezer, by this image is telling the rabbis, you are uprooting the carob tree. You are breaking with tradition. You are now presenting an opinion which was not part of the oral tradition that was handed down. Because I have that tradition. The sages did not accept it. So then he went on to the channel of water. And as we know, water is also a symbol for Torah. Torah which flows. The flowing of the Torah is again a symbol of this dynamic entity which goes from one generation to the next. And what are they doing? They're trying to make it go backwards. They're reversing the stream, the flow. And the rabbis don't buy his position. So then he tries to bring a proof from the walls of the Beit Midrash. And as we saw in the story, who represents the Beit Midrash? Who is the one who maintains the Beit Midrash? The first one inside, the last one to leave. The one who, when he's in the Beit Midrash, doesn't sleep, does not engage in idle conversation. Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Eliezer says, look at the Beit Midrash, what are you doing to it? And the Beit Midrash begins collapsing. You're destroying that structure. At which point Rabbi Yoshua scowls, admonishes the Beit Midrash, stopping it from collapsing. But know what happens. The Beit Midrash is in a quandary. The walls are tilted. Something has happened. The Beit Midrash is no longer the same place. It began collapsing, but at the same time, it does not go back to its original position. What is the meaning of this in the story? The rabbis here, led by Rabbi Yoshua, are taking a position which is new, which is radical, which threatens the Beit Midrash. They're not accepting what was handed down. And that potentially can destroy the Beit Midrash. And that is the fear of Rabbi Eliezer. They are presenting a position that it is possible for rabbis to not only transmit tradition, but to innovate. That in fact, the Beit Midrash is not just a place where we absorb, but where we initiate. And Rabbi Eliezer's final argument is, if I'm right, let a heavenly voice come out. And a heavenly voice comes out and says, who are you to argue with Rabbi Eliezer when the halakha is like him everywhere? And then Rabbi Yoshua makes the bold statement from our parsha, Lo bashamayim hi, it is not in heaven. Once the Torah was given, it is now the Torah of the people, not of God. And it is the people who make the final determination of what the law is. Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer represent two radically different perceptions of Torah, of study of Torah. Rabbi Eliezer's position is, truth was given at Sinai. Our job is to faithfully transmit that truth. Our job is to somehow reconstruct that truth. Our job is not to innovate, but simply to preserve. And therefore it requires a tremendous commitment to the Beit Midrash to make sure that we in no way distort, lose that complete truth that was handed down at Sinai. It is interesting that in a number of places in the Talmud, Rabbi Eliezer is referred to as a shamuti. And there are two ways that this can be understood. One, based on the continuation of the story, that Rabbi Eliezer was excommunicated. Shamuti is the word for excommunication. But another way of understanding it is that Rabbi Eliezer was from the school of Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai, who believed in there being what would be called today one way of Torah, Torah true Judaism. There is only one way. And the way to know that one way is to go back in time, to faithfully transmit the tradition, to not innovate. Rabbi Yoshua reflected a different position. Rabbi Yoshua's position was that once the Torah was given at Sinai, it is handed over to people to now shape that Torah. Yes, people do have the ability to innovate. And yes, it is not only a question of somehow trying to gauge some absolute truth, but to somehow take that absolute truth, have it interface with reality, and create a truth which human beings can live with. It may very well be that on some theoretical, absolute scale, Rabbi Eliezer is right, and that is the heavenly voice. And that is Rabbi Eliezer, who to a great extent is backed by God. And yet what you find is that ultimately the halakha is based on what people understand and can live with. And that is Rabbi Yoshua. If Rabbi Eliezer is not able to convince them of the veracity of his position, then his Torah is not a Torah of life from their perspective. And in fact, as we see in the story, what is God's response? My children have defeated me. My children have defeated me. The story is a very, very powerful story. And in fact, the message of the story, which I think is also true to the context, is saying that the Torah is something which is not meant to be beyond us. The Torah is meant to be something which is a Torah of life, which is a Torah that we can comprehend. And therefore it is our duty to comprehend it to the best of our ability. It is our duty to engage that Torah, to shape it, as best as we can understand. Yes, it is very important to receive the traditions of the previous generations. But at the same time, we have to engage those traditions. We have to understand those traditions. We have to apply those traditions. And it may be that at a certain point, we will say that we see it differently. As I said, this is a radical statement. It has the potential to destroy the Beit Midrash, to uproot a whole chain of tradition. The flip side of it is that it actually shows how much God wants to empower us, to make us partners in terms of Torah, to play an active role in shaping that Torah. As I said, this is also true to the context of our parsha. I spoke about the beginning of the parsha, which discusses the covenantal relationship that God enters into with each individual, and how each individual can in fact impact on the destiny of the nation, the tremendous responsibility it places on that individual. And in this story, what we see is how the engagement with Torah is something which is also given to each and every individual, to become a partner in the shaping of the Torah, to not just transmit passively, but to actively engage it, to actively shape it. We are in the period before Rosh Hashanah now. The new year is approaching, a time for taking stock. Perhaps one of the things that we should ask ourselves is how much do we engage that Torah? How much do we, on the one hand, as Rabbi Eliezer, absorb that Torah, do the best of our ability to somehow take in what the previous generations have said, but at the same time, having done that, how much do we perhaps then adopt the position of Rabbi Yoshua, who won't accept what Rabbi Eliezer said to his students in Masechet Sukkah, when they asked him about the laws of Sukkah, and he said, I didn't hear it. Well, if you didn't hear it, and we don't have that accepted tradition, then we have to somehow come up with a solution. It's not enough to just say, I will simply do whatever was, but we have to be able to somehow adapt, innovate, find solutions to new questions that are being asked. This places a tremendous responsibility on anyone who takes Torah seriously, to be able to maintain that tension of, on the one hand, preserving the tradition, and on the other hand, being able to say in situations, we need to come up with creative solutions. May each of us take seriously the words of the Torah. Lo bashamayim hi, it is not in heaven. Lo me'ever layam hi, it is not beyond the sea. It is within our grasp, each one of us, to be able to engage the Torah, to be able to shape the Torah, to make the Torah our Torah. May we all be blessed with a good year, a healthy year, a year of blessing, and a year of spiritual growth. Shabbat Shalom and Shana Tova.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger, and thank you for tuning in. We wish you a wonderful new year, Shana Tova. If you have any comments on the podcast, please let us know via podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.